is Rich Courage.
And this is Lance.
And this is the Voices Within podcast. This episode deals with how Fountain House members' mental health affects their relationships.
Relationships with parents, relationships with friends, relationships with work, relationships with anything that you want to discuss. We're ready to hear it and try to relate as Fountain House members and just in mental health in general.
Sounds good. Let's do it. Again, I'm Rich Courage. I'm a member and a peer counselor of Fountain House. I was born in Brooklyn, February 10th, 1960, into a world that was loud and angry, parents fighting all the time. And even though I was born in 1960, I didn't really exist emotionally until 1965, my father left, which is another story. My relationships were born out of that relationship. I grew up laughing and crying and, you know, sorrows and joys, but underneath all that, there was this depression. Little history. I moved 11 times before I was nine. I've been hospitalized 13 times for depression. Not in a long time, though, thanks to Fountain House. I've had 7 fights in my life, 21 jobs, 2 loyal dogs, and I've loved 1 woman. But through all my life and all of that, I thought I was depressed. I was not. I had depression. The difference being, I am not a mental health problem. I have a mental health problem, and it's affected all my relationships. Problems are solvable, though. Recovery is possible. As a peer counselor, I don't tell folks how to solve their lives. I don't even tell them how to live their lives. I tell them how I live mine. The ups, the downs. I give my folks stories. I tell them how I felt lost. I felt like nobody. And then nowadays, I feel like somebody. Many of the times I felt I had learned nothing and gotten nowhere mentally and emotionally. Life was over again and again. And yet each time I remind myself of every good, joyful moment I ever had and that I wanted more. Relationships are a bitch. That's a whole nother story. Folks, in this podcast, we'll speak on that.
That's amazing. Some of that stuff I didn't even know, knowing you for so many years. Yeah, I'm Lance, and I've been a member of Fountain House since 2004. I'm sober 27 years. I'm bipolar. And if you need some help with that, feel free to contact me. I sponsor a lot of people with dual diagnoses. I was a facilitator for this group called MDSG.org, Mood Disorder Support Group in New York City. I'm listening to this American Indian lady counselor. Her name is Veronica Lightning Horse Perez. I'm also listening to my doctor, Dr. Ralph Aquila, on my mental illness. And I always have relationships problems with my work. We work incredibly long hours and then we don't work at all. And then getting the next job is the work. So that's been a bone of contention for my whole adult life. I'm with a powerful union. I work on Broadway. I did a film in 2008. It's on YouTube called Fountain House Lance's Story. And there you can see more about me. So let's get on with the podcast.
My mental health has affected every relationship in my life. How can it not? Our relationships are about how we get along with each other and communicate with each other and act with each other and how we respond to people. And there have been times when I simply could not respond. And that was difficult for people. There have been times where I have had over responses or exaggerated responses, and that's difficult on people, including myself. So I don't think that you can have a mental health issue and expect it not to affect the people in your life. The people you live with, people you work with, your relatives, anybody who cares about you, I think that it's going to affect that relationship. And I found that consistently seeing my doctors, consistently working with my doctors with medication. I've been able to fine tune everything so that I have really great relationships with people, my family, et cetera. But it came with a lot of work. Wasn't easy. Some people can just breeze through, but I think when we have a mental illness, it makes us different from other people, makes us maybe more sensitive to certain things than other people might be, that it makes more work for us. But it's not insurmountable. It's something that we can do when we work with our doctors consistently. And I just found that even when I didn't feel like it, I just had to do it. And that has made a huge difference in my relationships and making my relationships much stronger and more fulfilling.
Thank you, April, for the call. I really resonated with three things you said. How can it not affect our relationships? Of course, it affects all of our relationships so much. So that I really resonated with. And it came with a lot of work, you said. Boy, the amount of work that I do to try to stay, you know, centered around my relationships and focused is really, really difficult. So I get that too. And something we can do even when we don't feel like it, I believe you said. In AA, I learned an adage which was amazing for me, is that feelings aren't necessarily facts. And boy, can I really take myself into not wanting to deal and just be apathetic. So I really appreciate this. What's your feelings, Rich?
I like that she ended on an upbeat note.
Yeah.
Miss April saying, you know, that there are doctors and there is help, and I help myself, and hopefully she's doing better. I know in my life, relationships are the way in which two or more people are connected, and I had trouble connecting to anybody. Language to me, communication to other people, always had this undercurrent of pain. So I would make jokes. I basically felt like I didn't deserve good people and I couldn't avoid the bad people.
Wow.
And when she talks about getting along is what communication is about, that really resonates with me. I mean, I don't mean to take the focus off her. You know, she talked about not responding well and overreacting other times. And I can relate to all that. There were times when I just had nothing to say because I was so wrapped up in my own grief. You know, well, not grief, depression, whatever it was. And there were times when that boiled up and I overreacted to the slightest little thing that I didn't like. So I definitely relate to what she was saying. I mean, I grew up, you know, a single kid, no siblings and crazy parents. And if I didn't get what I wanted, well, I'm going to take my toys and go home. And that happened in love. That happened in work. That happened everywhere. So I'm very happy that she had a nice positive ending. That's all I can say about it.
Thank you, April. Next caller.
Hi, this is Cynthia from Home and Garden. So has my mental health impacted my relationships? Absolutely. In many ways. It's funny because I actually didn't receive my first mental health diagnosis of like borderline personality disorder and, you know, and PTSD and things like that until 2015. So it's still pretty new. It affected my relationships before I even knew what was going on with me. And then after, it definitely has after, it's affected the way I approach situations with family, with friends, even working relationships. There's one example where I worked privately for a very nice person on the east side. We'd been working together for a couple of years, but I would just have such a hard time following through with my work. I would just get really sad and really anxious and really depressed. And she never questioned my character. She trusted me to do the job, But the issue was my emotions that I didn't even know where they were coming from, they affected my performance. So we don't work together anymore, but that's another relationship that was severed because of things that I still haven't even processed. And it's been really interesting just trying to figure out how to navigate relationships in whatever form, because there's still stuff I don't even understand about why I feel certain things. So again, the answer is it really has, but also in a positive way, it's made me more empathetic to people, more understanding. I have a family member who's experiencing anxiety for the first time, and it's definitely helped me to be more compassionate than I probably would have been if I hadn't gone through what I've gone through. You know, there's definitely pros and cons to everything. So I'm definitely grateful for the positive impacts too, that it's helped me to be a better friend, sibling, member of Fountain House. I definitely think it's good to focus on that aspect too. All right. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
First off, she says she's from Home and Garden, and we should clarify that this podcast is going out worldwide, and that some people might not know what Home and Garden is, a division within Fountain House. What is Fountain House? Go to fountainhouse.org. It helps mentally ill people like Rich and myself and the caller deal with life on life's terms, and gives them skill sets and an education. And it's a really wonderful organization. And it's in the clubhouse model. And contact your local clubhouse if you want to know more about that. Go ahead, Rich.
Yeah, what I love about Fountain House, and this is not communicated in the literature, really. It's hard to communicate this. It's intangible. It's ephemeral. It's the community. The community. Mm-hmm. I mean, Lance and I, how long have we been friends?
Oh, 15 years.
15 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen you up. I've seen you down. I've seen you sideways. And you've seen me the same way.
True. True.
And I want to ask you, Lance, one thing that struck me in her recording was when she said relationships get severed. And she talked about how this woman she had gotten along with and thought well of her, but all of a sudden, snap, there it went. Have you ever experienced anything like that?
Yes, yes. And it was in her work she was saying that. And I can say I can build perfect bridges all years long and say the one wrong thing at 2:30 in the morning after working a 15-hour day, you know, with this person, and that can get me shown the door that night. It has happened. It has happened. And, you know, we can say one wrong thing to our bosses or our coworkers, and he's the relative of somebody else that happens to be the boss, and you're done. You're done.
I know what you're talking about. I also, one thing that impacted me when I heard the word severed, I have had depression my whole life. Even when I felt good, it was like I transcended the mire. It's like I shoved my head above the waves of depression and breathed the air of joy and then was sucked back under. Once I was sucked back under, be it a friend or a girlfriend or I don't have family, suddenly it was like I had never connected to them at all and had never meant anything to them and they never meant anything to me. And it was awful. It literally was severed. It was like somebody cut my connection to the life. People in the world. It was horrible. So, I mean, I'm being a little dramatic, but it was pretty dramatic.
I remember when you were really, really depressed for many years. And it is so inspirational to see the creative, fun-loving guy that you are now. And we should take pause with that because that can happen to us again. You know, we get in these lulls that people don't understand who don't have these conditions. Cynthia says that she's with a relationship that it affected her relationships before I even knew what was going on with me. Let's talk about that, Rich.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I mean, I didn't lose everything in my life, my possessions and my mother, my only living family member and my job and my girlfriend and my dog and everything else until I was 22. But all through my childhood, I had this. I mean, I would laugh at a movie, you know, and I would have a friend and joke around, but always there would be this loneliness, this low self-esteem thing. You know, I mentioned it before on the podcast. I'm not good enough for the people I like and the people I'm not crazy about. And I don't want to offend. And I had this low self-esteem thing going before I knew what the hell was wrong with me. And then for years later, wandering around, I wandered around for decades with this cloud, you know, am I depressed? I wasn't your usual, well, I don't know, usual. I wasn't the depressed person that lies in bed all day. I was very physically distraught, had a lot of pain, tension. And anyway, yeah, I know what you mean.
It's for me on that realm, before I was diagnosed, even after I was diagnosed, I was locked up in Bellevue Hospital for 6 weeks, not to see the light of day during those whole 6 weeks. And that was brutal. That was my first hospitalization. And I couldn't get with having a mental illness, but I could get with, they said, and you're an alcoholic. And I said, holy moly.
There you go.
You know, and we used to wear that as stagehands. We used to wear that like a badge of honor. Things are very different now. That's old days. But I could deal with being an alcoholic, but I couldn't deal with the mental illness. So basically, until I treated my alcoholism and got sober, could I really witness that I was still having manic episodes stone sober. And when I took the alcohol, which was self-medicating process, out of the equation, and I was still going manic and still going depressed, then I knew the doctors were right. I would come to have 6 more visits in various hospitals, California and here.
Wow.
Okay, let's go to our next caller.
In my personal relationship, such as family, I feel like after getting this mental illness that I have brought me to a point of reconciling with my dad. He usually calls me now every day to check up on me, and we reach out to one another more than we used to back. He shows that he really cares about my well-being, and both physically and mentally. On the other hand, with my mother, we kind of lean on each other since we are both disabled. Now my mother is physically disabled and I am mentally disabled with the voices in my head. On my behalf, we will sit down with one another to discuss any issues I'm having. We go grocery shopping so that I can help lift up different products such as packs of Poland Spring water. I frequently am talking with my brothers and open up more to my family members that live either close to me or the ones who are living in different states. In terms of friendship, I really don't have any friends or associates outside of Fountain House. The voices in my head tell me don't trust anybody who isn't family members or I haven't known them since I was a young child. It gets harder to let my guard down, just make new friendships to last. When it comes to romantic relationships, it isn't easy for me since the voices in my head tells me I am not good enough for a particular woman that I find attractive and would like to start a relationship goal with someone. From the time I try to step close to someone who I like, voices tell me in my head that it makes no sense and that makes me nervous. I just turn away and from approaching the person, and it allows me to stay shy away, but also lose many chances of intimate relationships that can possibly go into a relationship.
I love that Richard reconciled with his dad, and gosh, that really is a soft spot for me. I did the same. Didn't you as well, Rich?
My mother and I had a stir. My father left when I was 5, and the loudness stopped. I was with my mother until I was 22. The last year of her life, we started to finally communicate because we had never even, I can't even remember a conversation that we had before that. I lived in all these different places, mostly one-room apartments, and I just wanted my privacy. A normal kid wants to be independent. I wanted to get away from her entirely. The year before she died, I got together with her, and then she died. So I barely had a chance. So I really love what you just said, that he got together with his father.
And he also says he has a challenge, and my hat's off to him on this challenge, Richard, on the phone, is that his mother is physically disabled, And he identifies as being mentally disabled, and he's also dealing with his mother and having to help her. And that is like really, really hard existence when you have to, you know. I had a therapist once, she said a great thing. She said, you can't both be needy at the same time in the same room. Mm. You gotta take turns. Boy, was that helpful.
Wow. Yeah, what you just said about Richard and his mother, I know Richard personally. He has brilliant ideas. And I got to say, I've had depression. Courage, my last name, Courage, it means to have heart. Doesn't mean to have guts or willpower. It means to have heart. He puts his heart forward before any other concerns for himself or anybody. He puts his heart out there. And I salute him for that.
I relate to his anxiety he has around girls and stuff. You know,
oh God,
we all have that more so than your normal person would have without a mental illness, because, you know, when are you going to tell her? When are you going to drop the bomb? You know, when's she going to figure it out? When's he going to figure it out? So those anxieties come up against us. And, you know, all I could say to Rich is fight the power, man, fight the power, you know, just keep trying.
Yeah. He's a great guy.
Okay, let's go to our next caller.
Hi, my name is Eva, and I can't even tell you how much my relationships have been affected by a mental illness. Like, I'm very productive, I'm very creative, but my relationships have literally been a disaster. Like, I can write a book on them. I've had breakups, I've had friends being upset, I've had me being upset, I've had friends being demanding. I've had me calling and calling and repeatedly calling people. That was a big problem that a lot of people I don't call too often, but if I find someone's advice very beautiful and very useful and very poignant, I keep calling sometimes. And that's been a big, big issue. I can't help it. I've never broken out of the habit. I've had the habit my whole life. So the constant calling can be a disaster. Then I've had people calling me, which is a disaster. And all this stems from a basic form of anxiety, or I don't really have depression, but I have a lot of anxiety. And the either a relationship for me would always be either obsessive or non-existent. And I think that can often come. And just working, I was okay with. Like programs, I was okay with. Like anything structured, I was okay with. But I remember even in like a hospital once, there was like this obsessive nature to like a friendship, like another member, client that was there. And it's just, it can be just so crazy, just so, so crazy. So that obsessiveness can come from having a mental illness. And that's where it's affected my relationships. But I am very stable. And I am very high functioning with all the medication that I'm taking. Now, the medication helps me completely, and I'm practically normal with the medication. But those relationship problems are there. They've affected me completely, like just who owes who was a big one when I was living at the residence. Like, oh, I bought this for you, now you owe me that. Like that kind of bargaining was a problem. Now I'm not having too much of a problem with anything like that because I live with my sister, so I'm not having too much of a problem with relationships, but I just don't have very many of them. But that me calling someone for advice can be overwhelming to that person. It can definitely be overwhelming to that person. So there has to be a balance to anything in life. There has to be a balance to relationships and dynamics of a relationship that are completely balanced, I believe, for both of you to grow and function and do what you need to do for your goals and your dreams and making sure that you are on a steady ladder to those dreams and those lofty goals. And that obsessive nature that comes from that has to be eliminated somehow, if you can do it. So thank you so much. This is Eva signing off. Hopefully some of this was humorous and hopefully some of this was really true. And it was really true if it rang true for you. Hopefully some of it rang true for you. So thank you so much. Thank you.
I think Eva's a champ. I've had many conversations with Eva, and she's an artist. She didn't mention this, but she does all these things. She's an artist and a writer, and she always puts herself out there. And I know she said, you know, I've had non-existent or obsessive relationships, but at the end, she identifies the situation and says, look, you know, this is what I have to do. I need to get rid of the obsessiveness. And I think as she, hopefully, as she gets, you know, more into her recovery, the obsessiveness will get less and less intense and less frequent. And I wish her the best. I hope she can have relationships that are more balanced and pleasing to her.
I love Eva's timbre of her voice. It's so enthusiastic, always, even when she's in a bad spot or being, you know, in anxiety. She always sort of, you know, and here's the double-edged sword about Eva, Richard Courage, and myself. When you present well, high-functioning people have it tough in a sense because most will think you don't have a mental illness. And
yeah,
that's kind of a double-edged sword because then it rears its ugly head and they're like, what the hell's wrong with you? You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I get her anxiety and I love the way she uses disastrous relationships. I've had disastrous relationships. You know, it's a very profound statement and kind of, I don't mean to be laughing at it, but you know, I'm laughing because I relate. And,
yeah, me too. Absolutely. I was smiling myself, not at her misery or challenge, but, you know, because I've shared it, you know. And you're absolutely right, Lance. I've spent most of my life joking around and trying to say clever things, you know, and hiding whatever was underneath. Sometimes I felt like saying clever things and telling a joke, making people feel good. But a lot of the time it was a way of covering up that I just felt miserable inside or felt lonely or like I don't deserve attention. And, you know, as far as her talking about being obsessive, oh my God, I've had times during the pandemic where I was posting stuff on Facebook and then I spent a whole day looking for likes and responses, you know, because I was like a lot of people, you know, lonely and wanting to connect. And that was a way I thought I could connect. And really, you know, I'm hearing one thread through all these folks, Richard and April and Cynthia and Eva, and it seems to be a thread of courage. There's the saying, an old quote, do not go gently into that dark night, rage against the dying of the light. I think they're, do not go gently into that dark night, brave against the dying of the light. They're being very brave. I admire that.
I like that so far our callers are also shrouding it with a little bit of hope in their story, that they have a little bit of technique that they've developed over the years beyond the medications to counter this. My latest thing with anxiety for Eva is Palo Santos. It's these sticks that you can get. And I smell them all the time and I rub the oil in my hands and I put these sticks in my pocket. And when I get nervous, just the smell of them really just centers me and focuses me back, brings me right to the now.
So if I smell you, I'll be centered. Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
Okay. Sounds good. Next caller.
Hey guys, this is Duarte calling in. You know, I would say my mental health probably has affected my relationships. You know, just to give a little bit of context of my little diagnosis. I'm somebody who kind of has had like social anxiety. You know, like a little bit box of like mild depression and just some anticipatory fear. And so, you know, like sometimes it's not easy for me to express that with other friends. Like I'm somebody who like has like full conversations with myself because, you know, that's kind of my way of kind of coping with myself. It doesn't make me like an insane person or anything, but, to give a little bit of context, I live with parents who has anxiety and she has like nightmares and stuff. And so honestly, sometimes that can be rough, you know, like living with a parent who has like their own share of like mental illnesses. It's exhausting sometimes because, you know, I have to take her to the hospital because she's afraid to take others by herself. It can be very frustrating. And, you know, sometimes you'll wake up like in the night and experiencing nightmares, and that can be a little bit scary. Otherwise, you know, my relationship with my mom is pretty solid. But, and, you know, just thinking about my relationship with my siblings, it's like non-existent. And it's like, you know, it doesn't really have to do with mental health. If anything, I would say the pandemic kind of exacerbated that given the racial justice stuff. So know, like it created a rift between us. Like, yeah, I'm in my hole. But at the same time, you know, it's made me closer to my friends and like other communities, like including this one. That's one aspect I would say. But on the other hand, as for dates, like, you know, I've gotten nervous and stuff. You know, sometimes I'll like hide it well. And so, you know, no one really know, like, hey, this guy had like anxiety or, you know, just from being like so confident, you know, given my work experience at working at events. But honestly, you know, I've never really had a girlfriend, which may come as a surprise. And so, like, I haven't really like opened myself up like super vulnerably to, you know, like another woman to like really see like that aspect. Like, yeah, you know, I see a therapist. So does everybody else. So I haven't really let anybody in about that. I don't think it's a big issue for me, to be quite honest. Like, my closest friends accept me for who I am.
I love Dwight that he says, my closest friends accept me for who I am.
Yeah.
Is that what you get at Fountain House more than anything else? You're going to make some really close friends and good business relationships as well.
Yeah.
I feel bad that he doesn't feel like that he, you know, can have a girlfriend, if I heard it correctly, or that he just doesn't have a girlfriend. And I went through many, many years of not having a significant other. So I know what that loneliness can really play on your mental illness and your well-being. The parent, again, he's taking care of another one who's taking care of his mother and her own mental health issues on top of his own. And boy, that gets really tricky. I mean, my hat's off to you, Dwight. What do you think, Rich?
My hat's off to him too. I have enough trouble taking care of myself, never mind another person, plus the challenge of mental health. So he's a very courageous, another guy with a big heart. Before I got chronically depressed, what does that mean? Age 22, where the world fell away and it wasn't just an undercurrent. It became everything, my whole self. I had a girlfriend for 7 years, but we had nothing in common. You know, we just got together because we were young and we were lonely and blah, blah, blah. And that's what kids do. And we weren't really intimate emotionally. And why am I bringing this up? Because as far as not having a girlfriend, not connecting, then I got crushingly depressed. So anybody I met in the next, what was I, 22, so the next 40 years of my life up until now, really haven't had any intimate emotional connections. Physical stuff, yeah, which that's fine, but I can relate to being lonely and, you know, having mental illness, mental health, whatever you want to call it, issues. Again, I go back to that word severed. Anytime I would get close to somebody, the damn thing would sever my connection.
Yeah.
And it was it's been very difficult. Now, I want the people hearing this to leave on a good note. I feel much better nowadays through community at Fountain House and work I've done on myself and therapists and medicine and the whole, I wish I could say there was a magic bullet, but I would just say keep at it. Depression is less intense and less frequent, and the duration of depressions are much less. And I think now maybe I would be able to, you know, have a girlfriend that I could connect with, not just hang out with a couple of days or weeks or months. So I'm looking forward to that. But I can empathize with what Dwight was saying.
I've been with the same woman on and off, mainly on, for 21 years now. So
wow.
We really became good friends. And we're better friends than ever these days. But we still get into it, you know. We get into it every 3 weeks or so, you know. And sometimes it's me and sometimes it's her. And, you know, that's part of life, you know.
I'm laughing. That's the laugh of familiarity. I relate to it. I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing because I've been there.
Yeah. But I think we're at the end of our callers.
Yeah.
And I think we should plug Fountain House one more time.
Fountain House, a wonderful, wonderful place in Manhattan on West 47th Street between 9th and 10th Avenues. What makes it wonderful? You could go back to work, go back to school, go back to life in a place that's safe and friendly and supportive. And has no time limits. And it sounds like Shangri-La, huh? You know, anybody wants to come and take a tour once this COVID thing eases up. It has saved my life literally and metaphorically, time and time again. And I have to say, the community, the people telling their stories, just like the stories we just heard, where I go, wow, it's not just me, or, oh, that's how they did it, or I get to tell somebody my story, and they could say, oh, that's how you got better. You know, it's just this wonderful hodgepodge mix of people. You know, I finally feel like I have a home, like I have a family. And I want to go back out into the world. You know, I do things in the world, but the quote, real world, unquote. But, you know, Fountain House has been essential and invaluable. It is a great relationship with the people there that I have developed.
And worldwide, your local clubhouse, mental health, mental illness clubhouse, was probably trained here at Fountain House in New York. Rich, how much does it cost to be a member?
Well, I'll give you my address. You can mail me the $50. No, I'm just kidding. It's free.
It's free.
Absolutely free as the breeze.
Free.
Just have to have a diagnosis, and you know they'll explain it to you when you contact them.
Thank you guys for tuning in, and look out for our next podcast coming up in a few weeks. And thank you for.
Nice to work with you, Lance.
Nice to work with you, Rich.
As your girlfriend, my love.
I love.
Baby, don't go away. Don't leave me here in pain, little girl.
If you'd like to get in touch with us regarding this podcast or have any questions or concerns for the Voices Within, just email us at fhstudios@fountainhouse.org.
The views expressed in this podcast do not necessarily represent the views of Fountain House.